In a class I took about the Torah, the Pentateuch, I wrote a research paper regarding holiness. Unfortunately, it's impossible to cover the details of a 30-page paper in a 20-minute episode, but I want to share some highlights because holiness is one of the most important themes in the Bible, and it is an essential characteristic, if not the essential characteristic, of God. To learn more, join me for today's episode of All Things Apostolic. Since God is holy and commands his people to be holy, a proper understanding of the nature of holiness is essential for knowing God and his expectations for humanity. However, defining holiness can be challenging. The Old Testament does not offer an explicit definition, so the meaning has to be gleaned from an examination of God's words and actions and commands. The Pentateuch depicts holiness as the intrinsic essence of God's character, and we can see it manifested through three primary aspects: transcendence, purity, and glory. Now that's kind of a mouthful, so I'm going to say that one again. The Pentateuch depicts holiness as the intrinsic essence of God's character, which we see manifested through the primary aspects of transcendence, purity, and glory. I want to take a few minutes to explain each of these terms, and then we're going to work our way through the Pentateuch by looking at these three characteristics. So the first aspect of holiness is transcendence. God transcends his creation. This means that he is independent of it and separate from it. He cannot be contained by it. However, he is also immanent, not imminent with an I, which means about to happen, but immanent with an A, in the sense of operating within his creation in order to sustain it. He is so far above us, but he's also actively engaged in the lives of his human creation. Transcendence and immanence are sometimes viewed as opposite sides of a spectrum, and this is one of the aspects of God that makes him so remarkable. God is separate from creation and cannot be contained by it. But this holy God, who is majestic and greater than his creation, is also with us in this world. Although God is sovereign and all-powerful over his creation, he condescends to actively engage in this world. God is both transcendent and immanent. And because he is transcendent, his immanence is even more remarkable. Another aspect of God's holiness is purity. And this is probably the characteristic we associate most often with holiness. God is pure. He has no defect. He cannot be polluted or contaminated. Since purity is an essential part of holiness, something or someone that has been set apart and specially dedicated to God and his service cannot be used for secular purposes. The word family connected to the topic of holiness in the Old Testament includes the verb kadash, the noun kodesh, and the adjective kadosh. All three terms relate to the sphere of the sacred that is distinct from the common or profane. The adjective kadosh means to be pure, consecrated, and removed from profane usage. In Leviticus 10:10, God commanded Israel to make a distinction between the holy and the profane, and between the unclean and the clean. Once something was dedicated for use to or by God, or determined by God to be holy, it was in a new sphere, and the separation was not to be violated. It could no longer be treated as common. In addition to the concept of separation, God's purity has a moral dimension. The Bible characterizes him as righteous and just. Because of his purity, God opposes all manner of sin. God's holiness includes the idea of set apartness or separation from all that is sinful, unrighteous, or unworthy of God. God expects those who want a relationship with him to consecrate or separate themselves from anything that would cause a separation between God and them. The third aspect of God's holiness is his glory. He is known as the King of Glory. The glory of God is a visible emanation of the invisible divine self. When shown as a physical manifestation, it is brilliant, radiant, and beautiful. Think of the brilliance of Moses' face when he came down from Mount Sinai after spending time in God's presence. And when we are filled with the Holy Ghost, the glory of God shines through us. Since holiness is God's essential nature, God's character, his very being, and his activity are completely consistent, so we can look at God's words and actions as an outworking of his holiness. Let's look at some examples of God's holiness in the Pentateuch that reflect or demonstrate his transcendence, purity, and glory. In Genesis, right from the beginning of creation, we see God's transcendence. God alone acted to create something out of nothing. And the biblical picture of creation is very different than pagan mythology. The Bible clearly shows that the universe was created by God, who is separate from his creation. This is different than emanationism, which sees creation as an outflow of God, or pantheism, which is a belief that the world is one with God. The Bible stresses the difference between God and creation, because he transcends creation. And the heavens declare the glory of God. In creation, God modeled the principle of separation. He separated light from darkness, the waters above from the waters below, and day and night. Another act of separation was God blessing the seventh day and sanctifying it. This is the first use of the Hebrew adjective kadosh, which is translated as holy. God called the Sabbath holy. God set it apart and consecrated it. He ceased from his creative activity, and as a memorial, the seventh day was deemed sacred. In creation, we also see God as a moral agent because in the middle of the garden, he placed the tree of the knowledge of good and evil. So it is God who sets the standard about what is moral goodness and what is evil. God made humans free agents to be able to make moral choices. But even in the garden, God had rules of behavior to protect morality. And because of God's holiness, sin separates us from him. Human disobedience destroys intimacy with God and results in alienation. But because God desires to dwell with his creation, after the fall, he implemented a plan of redemption. And the rest of the Pentateuch provides the details of that unfolding plan. The transcendent God chose to be immanent. Interestingly, the story of Cain and Abel positions the words for good, tov, in Hebrew, and sin, chata, in the same verse for the first time in Genesis chapter 4, verse 7. God offered Cain an option, do good, tov, and be accepted, or sin, chata, lies at the door. And the primary word for sin in the Old Testament, chata, means to miss the point or to miss the mark. It was used of missing a target or losing one's way, as well as the moral meaning of missing God's standard of behavior or losing one's way spiritually. Now, as we know, wickedness and rebellion increased, leading to God's judgment through the flood. Noah experienced God's grace because he was righteous and blameless. The word blameless in Hebrew is tamim. It means to act with integrity in accordance with God's moral expectations. That same Hebrew word will be used again when God instructs Abraham in Genesis 17, and also when Moses instructs the Israelites in Deuteronomy 18 to act with integrity according to God's expectations. God is the one who sets the moral standards, and we are to obey. Although the book of Genesis does not explicitly refer to holy or holiness often, still we repeatedly see God's goodness, righteousness, and opposition to evil clearly displayed through his words and actions. When we get to Exodus and Leviticus, the terms holy and holiness occur frequently. The first mention of holiness in Exodus occurs in chapter 3, when God instructed Moses to remove his shoes because he was standing on holy ground. When God enacted a series of plagues on Egypt, he was clearly delineating between himself and the pagan gods of the Egyptians, since idolatry was a key threat to Israel's future holiness. Additionally, God used the plagues and the Exodus as a demonstration of his glory. The first use of the Hebrew word for holy as a verb in Exodus is when God commanded Israel to sanctify every firstborn male of the people and animals in Exodus chapter 13. God said, "It belongs to me." The verb is used again in reference to the consecration of the priests. By sprinkling on blood from the altar and anointing oil, Aaron and his sons were consecrated or made holy. In Exodus 29, the noun and verb forms of the word are used multiple times in reference to the altar because it was to be holy and consecrated. The concept of God's glory is also mentioned multiple times in Exodus in reference to God's abundant provisions in the wilderness and the physical manifestation of God's presence as a cloud and fire. God's glory is also associated with beauty. The accoutrements of glory were commonly impressive in their beauty. The garments of the priests were expressly designed to be unusually beautiful in order to convey some of the great dignity and importance of the office. God's glory also has the capacity to sanctify or consecrate, which it did to the tabernacle, the altar, and Aaron and his sons. This sanctification was followed by God's announcement of his intention to dwell among the people of Israel. Also, when Moses asked to see God's glory, God offered to make all of his goodness, or tov, passed before Moses, and then he hid Moses in the cleft of the rock while the hinder parts of his glory passed by. The implication is that God's full glory was too bright or powerful to behold fully. The book of Exodus concludes with God's glory leading the nation of Israel. Now, although holiness is more than morality and ethics, in the Ten Commandments, God made moral demands based on his holiness because morality is ultimately grounded in God's character and his holiness. God's commands are based on his character. The book of Exodus also includes instructions for the pattern of the tabernacle, which modeled increasing levels of holiness from the outer court to the holy place to the most holy place. Since God is holy, he gave stipulations for his people to be able to be in his holy presence. Also, as the sovereign over the whole world, he is the ultimate judge. Specifically, he judges sin and issues consequences, but he also blesses those who faithfully obey. The covenant distinguished Israel from the other nations, but the purpose of the separation was purity and to reflect God's glory, to draw the other nations as a part of the larger plan of redemption. The next three books I'm going to touch on, but more lightly. So moving on to the book of Leviticus, we find that the entire book is concerned with holiness and the core ideas of purity and atonement. The Israelites had to stay separate from the unholy. The entire ritual system of Leviticus was established to testify to the separation of the holy from the profane. And Israel had an opportunity to share in God's holiness. Leviticus 17 begins the section commonly referred to as the Holiness Code. This portion addresses the application of purity and holiness to practical situations for the community, such as food, sexuality, and social life. God was giving Israel guidelines for holy living. If people sinned, they would become defiled, and they would have passed that defilement to the sanctuary. But God would cut them off because God would not allow his sanctuary or his holy name to be defiled. In four instances in which Israel was summoned to holiness, a motivational clause was attached, such as, "Because I am holy," or "For I, the Lord your God, am holy." And these commands to be holy were never given by anyone else but God. It is God who sets the standard, inviting people to join in his holiness. Only God is holy intrinsically, but he offers the opportunity to be his holy possession if we abide by the parameters of a holy life. Next, we move to the book of Numbers. The primary theme is God's faithfulness to his covenant. And there are several aspects of this theme that we've already seen in previous books. First, God is the sovereign Lord over heaven, earth, all nations, and creation. He is transcendent. Second, God bound himself to his people with a covenant bond of love. And he redeems his people and is present with them. However, because of his holiness, he demands that his redeemed people be sanctified in all dimensions of their lives. Third, God is present with his people and interacts with them by instructing, blessing, and even chastising and punishing. The judgments could be quite severe because holiness was of utmost importance. For example, deliberate violation of the Sabbath was punishable by death. Also, there is the concept that defilement is lethally contagious, and the system described in Leviticus and Numbers is spatio-temporal. It protects, the purpose is to protect the sanctuary. This included the camp arrangement of sacred circles with the tabernacle in the middle, surrounded by the priests and Levites, followed by the tribes in the outermost circle. In the book of Deuteronomy, on the precipice of entering the promised land, Moses recapitulated many of the laws previously given and added some new ones. He needed the new generation to dedicate itself to the covenant with God. The book of Deuteronomy is organized to emphasize obedience to Yahweh and avoidance of idolatry. God must be worshiped exclusively. Holiness must be maintained in daily life, including social ethics. Feasts must be enacted to keep God at the forefront. Civil authority must be maintained, and righteousness must be maintained in human affairs. God is portrayed as holy and sovereign, fully distinct from his creation, yet fully present and active in it. The first mention of holiness in the book of Deuteronomy is commanded by God to keep the Sabbath day holy. Deuteronomy also carries the theme of separation. God had separated Israel from the other nations to make them his possession, and this was the basis for the call to holiness. The Israelites had to remain separate from all that was unholy. The ultimate goal was for Israel to be a God-exalting witness. From this brief presentation, I hope that you can see that the Pentateuch was carefully crafted to communicate the truth of God's holiness with a specific emphasis on the aspect of God's transcendence, purity, and glory. And I want to conclude with an interesting thought. The formation of the world and the formation of Israel have some striking similarities. In a sense, they were both creation stories, and the message of the Pentateuch as a whole follows this narrative. It begins with how God transformed chaos into the cosmos, turned darkness into light, and altered that which was unprofitable to that which was good, holy, and worth blessing. Similarly, God redeemed Israel from chaos and darkness and provided them with blessing and rest. He mandated holiness for them so they could experience fellowship with Him and be an example of the blessed life that comes from being in covenant under the kingship of God. The author of the Pentateuch carefully constructed a narrative to clearly communicate that the transcendent, holy God came to man in redeeming love within the context of regulations and prescriptions that were designed to maintain the purity of holiness that characterizes God's essential nature. God transforms darkness into light and things that are unprofitable into things that are good and holy. Thank you for joining me for today's episode of All Things Apostolic. And until next time, take care and God bless.